The following is a paid program. The views expressed are not necessarily the views of the owners or management of MyTalk 107.1.
You are going to be the best mom.
I'm an amazing mother.
You are the best mom in the whole world.
Lady, you are the best mom ever.
Welcome to The Mom Show, MyTalk 107.1's new show featuring guests and topics that all good moms will want to hear. The phone lines are open for your questions.
Am I doing this right?
651-641-1071 or email the show at mytalk1071.com, keyword mom.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to The Mom Show here on MyTalk 107.1. I'm Twyla Dang, and today I have in the studio Dr. Gretchen from Blossom Whole Family Therapy and Child Psychology Center.
Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for coming into the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, don't forget, everybody, all the information on The Mom Show is meant to help you and support you as a parent, and we want you to be able to get the best resources possible. So go check out the website. Go to mytalk1071.com, put in keyword mom, and you'll be able to get links to all of the information that we're sharing today. You'll also be able to get previous episodes of The Mom Show and connect with us there as well. And don't forget, you can always go to Facebook and connect with the show. On the website, there is a link. If you click on that link, it will take you directly to the Facebook page. Like the page and you can get more information about The Mom Show and all of the information that we share. And as always, we want to take your calls. 651-641-1071. Again, that number is 651-641-1071. So we'll happily take your calls today. And today's a pretty good day. We're going to be talking about something I think is pretty important for kids and families. We're going to talk about routines and the importance of routines today.
Yes, we are. We are. When I see kids, a lot of times the trouble that families are having actually come around routines in some way, shape, or form. So getting up and ready and out the door in the morning, getting home, getting homework done, getting to activities, getting to bed at night, getting enough sleep at night, and those sorts of things. So I thought it might be nice to have a show where we just talked about all of that stuff and help families out.
Absolutely. And then on top of all the great information we'll be able to share with you today, we have a guest that's going to be joining us on the line. We have, I should let you introduce our guest today.
Yeah, we have Dr. Carla Berkley, and she is a child psychologist as well as a child developmental specialist. And I'm very excited to have her and her perspective here on the show with us today, because I think child development is such an important thing to keep in mind, because our expectations, what we're expecting of our kids at any given point in time may or may not be developmentally appropriate. And so I love what Carla brings just in terms of her perspective on child development. So I'm very excited to have her here this morning.
Good morning, Dr. Carla. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Now, I think we should probably just start to frame out the conversation. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the importance of routines. Why are they important for families?
Yeah, well, routines are really important because I think they allow us to kind of go on autopilot, so that rather than have to think about, okay, what do I have to do next? What do I have to do next? We just kind of go through the routine. And so when that happens, our stress goes down and things become a lot smoother around the house. And so routines are just very important that way. I think it's just generally smart parenting. And I know Carla has, she has a perspective as well about the importance of routines. So Carla, I don't know.
Sure. So thinking about routines, one way to think about them is that they can be very helpful in lowering stress around certain times of the day, like Dr. Gretchen talked, such as bedtime, particular situations, such as doing homework. This is just smart parenting. We understand as adults that knowing what is going to happen, what to expect, allows us to prepare and to be more successful or productive. So when we talk about routines, and such as our topic today, a non-routine talk about routines, what do we mean by that? What we mean is that not only do we hope that you go away from today with some golden nuggets to try in your own parenting, it's always great to have examples that apply to you, but that we also want to send the message that there isn't only one right approach. It is really finding what fits for your own family and your lifestyle. It is also knowing, as Dr. Gretchen pointed out, that your kids are constantly changing and growing, so that what might be working perfectly at one stage may need some adjusting in the next, and that even if you're pulling your hair out right now over your morning routine, soon your child will dress, brush, eat all on their own, and you might even approve of their choice in clothing. So what is this promised miracle on the horizon, you might ask? One word, development. That's what I'm going to be talking mostly about today. Knowing what to expect of your children with regard to setting routines may be your single most important success factor. This is called developmental appropriateness, so knowing what to expect at each stage. As children grow in age, they gain the motor skills to button clothing, squeeze toothpaste, brush on their own, pack their backpacks the evening before. When they're toddlers, the best plan often is to put them to bed on the early side so they get enough sleep to wake up refreshed and to allow twice as much time in the morning to get ready than you think you should. Because you need there to be there, guiding them, to help them get dressed, presence in the bathroom as they brush their teeth. As kids get older, school age, prepping their backpacks the night before allows them to not only tell you about their day in school, but allows you to check to make sure they're adding their shoes for gym class, to make sure their trumpet case is ready to grab on the way out the door. These are all routines that and ways to help them this go more smoothly. Tweens, what about your kids that are in middle school? They have the skills to shower, check the weather on their own so they can lay out the clothes the night before. While teens can set their own alarms and go to the grocery store with you even on their own to get what they want and what you approve for a healthy breakfast to grab and go. So we're going to be discussing all of these different pieces. We're going to discuss it across, as Dr. Gretchen pointed out, across bedtime, after school, evenings. We'll talk more specifically about what's developmentally appropriate expectations, meaning what you can expect from preschoolers through your high schoolers. And although we know that kids certainly vary in terms of their temperament, how they approach life, and what they find challenging, knowing general guidelines about what to expect in terms of their age and development can make things go much more smoothly, not only for our kids, but for us as parents.
Well, that makes perfect sense to me. Dr. Carly, can you talk a little bit, before we sort of launch into the in-depth parts of this conversation, it's almost like there's a two pieces to this. There is the developmental stage for what a child can handle at their different ages and at their growth. But there's also a part that I don't think sometimes focus enough attention on. And that's the sort of parental piece, as a parent, understanding that as your child hits these developmental milestones, when to step back, how to step back, and allow them to actually sort of grow into that new developmental stage.
Absolutely, Tyler, that's a great question. And I think that is probably almost the most common question I hear from families when they come in. I think it's, as we are learning along with the child, right, as they grow and develop, they are learning new ways of being more independent. And that's really our job as parents, is to help guide them through that. So as we see transitions, as they can take on more responsibility, you know, as they're happy to do that. For all of us who are parents that have seen a 4-year-old grow into a 5-year-old and think about kindergarten, we see their joy there at the success that they can have when they gain more independence. And our job is to support that and to recognize those transitions. So knowing what to expect is a real benefit.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. And I think, too, it's not really an all or nothing. I think as parents, sometimes this just happens naturally because, you know, one day we're a little more rushed. And so we happen to put a little bit more on our child and realize, oh, wow, they just did that. Who knew? Mm-hmm. And they now have that skill. And so I think, you know, sometimes there is a natural evolution that happens within households as kids grow up and develop and change. And sometimes they'll even let you know when they're ready. You know, they'll basically tell you when they're young, and you know, at 3, you know, I'll do it. I do it, right? I do it. And I think that continues as they get older. The way that they communicate that changes, but I think they do let us know as parents when it's time to start to back off. And then it's our job as parents to do that and then see what happens. And I think, too, allowing them the time to do some problem solving and to figure it out before we sweep in and rescue is another really important thing that we can do as parents to facilitate that independence.
Well, and I think that's sometimes where the struggle really comes in.
Yeah.
It's not as they hit these milestones. And I know I'm the mother of a teenager, a tween, and a smaller child. And I tend to run into the thing now where we've done these routines for so many years that they kind of work like clockwork.
Mm-hmm.
And as
right.
the kids want more independence and they want to sort of develop how they want to do it or do it themselves, mm-hmm. it throws the well-oiled machine into chaos.
Yeah.
But there's right. that struggle between wanting them, really wanting to give them that room. And then at the same time, just going, but I mean, but we could get out of here by 8:15 if you just do it. Why can't we just keep doing it the way we're doing it? I mean, it's a really that sort of, you really desperately want them to have that independence, right. But it's very hard to let go of the idea of them having it within your boundary sphere.
Yes, it definitely can be. It definitely can be. Which, I mean, you bring up another really good point, and that is, you know, as parents, how are we showing up in those routines, in our role in those routines? Because I know, for example, at my house, I know for certain I have to be showered before the kids are up. And it doesn't even matter what time they're getting up. It doesn't matter how early. It doesn't matter. If I'm not showered before they're up, the morning turns into complete and total chaos. Mm-hmm. Like,
it's that just, sorting out your brain.
It does. You just, like, I think and that's going to be different in every family and for every parent. And so I think that's just another piece to keep in mind as we go through our talk today is, you know, what are you as a parent bringing into the situation? What are your own worries, you know, about being late or being on time or, you know, that sort of thing that may be playing into how willing you are to let your child have some independence, how able you are to support them where they aren't yet ready for the independence. You know, it's good to think about.
Absolutely. Now, we're going to be definitely digging in and talking more about the landscape of routines. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk specifically about things like your bedtime routines, your homework routines, morning routines, and sort of some of the things you can anticipate. And don't forget, we will take your question, 651-641-1071. We would love to talk to you today. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to The Mom Show here on My Talk 107.1.
My Talk 107.1 has two core missions, laughter and giving back. My Talkers, you help us do both. My Talk 107.1, everything entertainment. Darling, hold my hand.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Mom Show here on My Talk 107.1. I'm Twyla Dang, and I'm in the studio today with Dr. Gretchen from Blossom Whole Family Center and Child Psychology Center. And we also have a guest on the line. We have Dr. Carla Berkeley calling in today. And today we're talking about routines, the importance of routines, some of the things you can anticipate about routines. And we want to take your questions. So give us a call, 651-641-1071. Again, that number is 651-641-1071. Now, thank you, Dr. Carla, for staying on the line with us.
Yes, my pleasure.
Now, let's kind of start at what I feel like is the beginning, because I think when you have a child, even from the time that they're an infant, one of the first routines you get talked to a lot about and setting very quickly or working with very quickly is the bedtime routine. So let's talk, Dr. Carla, about sort of bedtime routines.
Absolutely. So you're right. From day one, these kids are individuals, right? We're interacting with us as parents. So knowing what is important in terms of routines can really help ease all of those transitions, both the child's routine, but also us as parents, as we going from new parent, right, to learning about all that sleep deprivation and how you can ease it, into having multiple kids and balancing all of those different kinds of schedules. So I think one of the things to remember when kids are really young is that, you know, early brain development is influenced by a child's experience. So if a child has experience with you as a parent in you being responsive to their cues and helping them when they're crying and feeding them when they're able, you get into a routine that is responsive back and forth that really helps to soothe them so they know what to expect. What you're doing is really building those coping techniques for the child themselves. And that continues as they become toddlers and preschoolers. Once they know what to expect, they can prepare themselves and work in a routine with you that really works best for both of you.
Now, Dr. Gretchen, can you talk to us a little bit about how much sleep kids genuinely need?
Yes, absolutely. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that for infants 4 to 12 months of age, they need anywhere from 12 to 16 hours, and that does include nap time. Toddlers, so kids between about the ages of 1 and 2, need about 11 to 14 hours, and again, that does include naps. Preschoolers, ages 3 to 5 years old, need between 10 and 13 hours, including naps. Grade schoolers ages 6 to 12 need 9 to 12 hours of sleep, and they're generally not napping at that time, so or at those ages, and so that's really nighttime sleep. Mm-hmm. And then teenagers need between 8 to 10 hours. So 13 to 18-year-olds need between 8 to 10 hours of sleep a night, and I can assure you many of them are not getting that.
Wow. Well, see, and I think we just don't, I think we drastically underestimate how much sleep kids actually need.
We really do.
And then as they get older, and I think that's part of this when you start to struggle with the routines. Mm-hmm. You and I were talking a little bit off air about how MEA has just undone my routine. and the idea that, you know, that our kids think, you know, because they're so independent and at this age and they can, you know, my children can do everything from cook themselves breakfast on the stove to, you know, doing light laundry to doing their own chores mm-hmm. to sort of managing their own schedule. Like they scheduled their own play dates and everything mm-hmm. and then just kind of connected with the parents for, mm-hmm. you know, logistics of rides. It was mm-hmm. very tough last night telling a 13-year-old and an almost 12-year-old, okay, it's 9 o'clock, go to bed. I mean, they had a heart attack. And even my husband, who understands the value, he's a health professional, understands the value of sleep, came in and was like, what? It's 9 o'clock. Why are they in bed? I'm like, because they need to sleep. And our schedule's way off.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we just, especially as they get older, we just drastically underestimate what they need in terms of that rest.
Absolutely. And some of that might be because we underestimate what we as adults need. Because I went to a training on sleep a few years ago, and it was so interesting because the instructor was worked in a sleep lab, and that's what she did was research on sleep. Mm-hmm. And she said when they get adults into the lab and they get them, they get kind of the sleep stuff worked out, everybody falls into 8 hours and with some weird number of minutes, like 13 minutes of sleep without variation. Like when things are routine mm-hmm. and you're going to bed at the same time and you're getting up at the same time and you're addressing any, you know, sleep concerns that there are. So if you have apnea and you're treating that, for example,
right.
that there's no variation in how much people actually sleep. What we vary is how well we tolerate sleep deprivation. So I think there's a lot of people who say, oh, you know, I'm fine on 7 hours of sleep. And you may be. What that actually means, though, is that you tolerate being an hour a night deprived of sleep better than some other people might tolerate that. So it's interesting.
That's terrifying. Especially given that there were many years I went on like 5 hours of sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, go ahead, Carla.
I was just wanting to build on that by saying there's really interesting research right now, and this is being the response to this around the Twin Cities is to change some of the school start times, particularly for our teenagers.
Yes.
Where sleep is directly connected, so the early school start time is directly impacting SAT scores, ACT scores. The scores that schools get judged on how they're doing and how kids get into colleges, right? So it really is a very relevant topic as we look at routines. How is sleep affecting these things?
Yeah, there's been like a couple, I believe at least two in the metro that have moved their start times down by a full hour.
Yes,
to help impact the students' sort of engagement in class. I said they were reporting like kids falling asleep in class during that first hour of the day, like that 7:30 to 8:30 hour, which and you're just, you know, you're thinking on top of all the other pressure the kids have on them, and the pressure of you're not getting enough sleep, so you're asleep in class is insane.
Yeah.
Dr. Carla, can you talk to us a little bit about what's essential to a bedtime routine?
Sure. So I think, as we all know, like Dr. Gretchen talked, we're all sleep deprived to an extent, aren't we?
Yes.
And as parents, being sleep deprived means that we're just not on our A game. Twyla, you were talking about that earlier. And I think that, you know, helping kids to regulate is the way to think about this. So that's a huge part of our parenting need, is to help kids figure out how to make their own good decisions to gain, you know, let them lead them into independence as they get older. But part of that is just self-regulation. So when we think about bedtime routines, we want to get kids to the point at which they can follow the routine. They can enter in and think, oh, I know what to expect. This is predictable. This is what we do every night. So how do you get them to kind of start winding down their day? Maybe that means for your family, you head upstairs with them or you head to the bathroom with them, and they kind of talk about their day as they go in to start brushing their teeth, to getting their pajamas on. So that is a signal to them and really in their brains that the day is winding down and where they're getting prepped to get started to kind of calm their bodies, their minds, to think about sleep and bedtime routines. So that, I think, is a great precursor. And then to be able to act, to be there as a parent guiding them, depending on their age, even as tweens and teens, they want to tell us about their day.
Oh, that's actually a really good way to sort of think about how to approach it, you know, sort of, and I think a lot of us have things that we sort of subconsciously do that we don't mm-hmm. think about. Like at our house, our real start of, you know, like whining toward bed is somebody's got to let the dog out.
Right.
You know, like the dog has to go out one more time. And then once the dog comes back in and kind of finds a cuddle spot, all of my children seem to gravitate toward the sleeping dog. And then it becomes like a whole like, no, it's my turn to sit next to the dog. So I'm like, everybody can lay down next to the dog if you really want to. And it kind of just starts that process of, you know, everybody seeming to calm down when the dog is calming. We're all calming. And then they don't seem to argue as much when I go, okay, it's time to brush your teeth because it's time to head that way. You know, it just kind of helps give a cue that it's time to start that way.
Yeah. Well, and the other cool thing about what you're describing, Twyla, is it's also a moment of connecting with each other and with the pet. And, you know, there's that moment of connection, which I think always does help transition, is when kids feel more connected, they transition more easily into whatever comes next. So I love that dog cuddle as a start here.
Well, I would love to say that's why we got the dog. I didn't think that far ahead. She was just real cute. So I'm going to take extra credit for that today.
Yeah.
Now let's talk a little bit, Dr. Gretchen, about how we sort of troubleshoot when you see there are challenges with bedtime.
Yeah. So I think the answer, you know, I just did a blog post, what do I do when? And the answer is always, it depends. So it depends on what's happening. It depends on what is getting in the way of the routine. So whenever I am working with a family to kind of help them figure out, you know, what to do differently at bedtime, it's always depending on what is it that is hard. So is it that the child, you get into bed okay, but then he's up because he needs a drink, and then he's up because he has to go to the bathroom again, and then he's up because he just had a nightmare, and then, you know, it's like the stay in the bed thing. And so then it's like, okay, well, what's making it hard for him to stay in bed? Is there anxiety? Is he not tired? You know, kind of figuring out some of those pieces are going to help inform what you need to do about how to keep, you know, help your child be in bed, stay in bed, relax, unwind, and fall asleep. So I think it's hard, you know, that's just a lot to think about. Practically, I think in terms of routine, what's predictable? Like, do you know every single night your child is going to ask for a drink of water? Then water needs to become part of the routine. Like, that just has to be part of what you do proactively to get it. You know, every time as your child's crawling into bed, are they suddenly saying that they're hungry? Then snack probably needs to be part of your bedtime routine. You need to back up and figure out, okay, so then if snack has to be part, then what part of the routine, then what time do we have to actually get started? Because that might be when, you know, bedtime routine actually starts. So some of this is, you know, taking some time as parents to take a step back and really look at what's happening and what's predictable and how can we start to modify the routine in anticipation of what's been challenging in previous nights.
Absolutely. Now, everyone, stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to talk more, a little bit more about the bedtime routine. Then we're going to transition to what comes after that, the morning routine. And don't forget, we would love to take your questions today. You have two experts in the studio, and it's a great time to get your questions answered. 651-641-1071. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Mom Show on My Talk 107.1.
My Talk 107.1 has won 8 National Gracie Awards, 2 Crystal Awards, and has been a Marconi Talk Station of the Year nominee 4 times. For one reason, you. Thank you, My Talkers. We love you. My Talk 107.1, everything entertainment.
If you feel you're sinking, I will jump right over into cold.
Whoa. Welcome back. You're listening to The Mom Show here on My Talk 107.1. I'm Twyla Dang. I'm in the studio today with Dr. Gretchen from Blossom Whole Family Therapy and Child Psychology Center and Dr. Carla Berkley. We've been talking about routines today. And before the break, we were talking about bedtime routines in particular. Now, there was one thing I really did want to point out. I don't want to lose sort of the momentum on what we've been talking about. But Dr. Gretchen, can you really talk about when we troubleshoot routines? Can we talk about the idea that there are sort of two sort of categories you need to look at when you're troubleshooting?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, some of the things I was talking about before the break were more kind of behavioral sorts of things. If he's hungry, you need a snack. You know, if he needs water, get a drink and that sort of thing. And so it is obviously really important. And most of the time, often, you know, those things will really help considerably with the bedtime routine. But sometimes there are health concerns that may also be impacting the routine. And so, you know, if you're troubleshooting behaviorally and you continue to kind of run into like it's just not quite working, it's not quite gelling, your child's still having a hard time staying in bed, going to sleep, staying asleep, that sort of thing, there could be medical issues going on. And so it can be very important to talk to your pediatrician about that. Some things that come to mind would be asthma, heartburn, digestive sorts of issues sometimes come up at night. Sometimes there's, kids have migraines, different things like that.
And yeah, so, allergy and breathing issues and things like that as well.
Yes.
I have one child that has always had very, very severe breathing issues in terms of he couldn't move air through his nostrils. He has very, very small airways. So for years he snored. He would wake up. He would sort of snap awake. He always had trouble falling asleep, staying asleep. And it took us probably a good 4 years to discover that he just really couldn't breathe at night.
Yeah.
And then if he got a cold or his allergies flared up, it was 10 times worse.
Yeah.
But it took a long time for us to understand that he wasn't just being difficult. He was a go along kid. So if he woke himself up and he couldn't get back to sleep, he'd read. So we just kept thinking, well, that's not appropriate for you to read at night. But really, it was something else entirely that was sort of, he was trying to make the best of the fact that he couldn't sleep.
Right.
And he didn't want to disturb anybody else.
Yeah.
So it's definitely one of those things where you really, and I think we're all sort of a very good silent observers of our children. We watch them. We watch what they do. But sometimes it's important to note that what it looks like on the surface might be something else. And it's always a good question to sort of ask those questions of your nurse line or your pediatrician when you go for your checkups to kind of follow through on some of that as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Now let's sort of transition from you've got a bedtime routine. They're asleep. It's beautiful. But they got to wake up sometimes. So Dr. Carla, talk to us a little bit about sort of the morning routine and what's reasonable to expect.
Yes. Great reminder about health issues and particular individual differences and how those can really throw you off what to expect as a parent. So getting help for those and getting more information is wonderful. So, you know, one of the things that I loved that we talked about in terms of bedtime routines was to use a transition object like a puppy that needs some sleep, right? So one of the things, particularly with younger kids, is to share stories about the routine before it happens. So if you can read a book about someone getting up and starting their day in a happy mood and what they do, it's a wonderful transition to be able to not just demand your child to do something, right, but to show them that it can be modeled, that it can really get your day off to a good start. Make sure those routines are predictable. So when you wake them up in the morning, some kids need a lot of time. My teenager, if I didn't wake her up, an hour before, she would not be happy, right? She just wants to get up on her own and figure out what she needs to get going in the day. My teenagers also don't want to talk in the morning. So I might, with my younger kids, I might get them up, have some cuddle time, which works wonderfully with my younger son. He sets his alarm to cuddle with me to get off to a good start of the day, right? But as kids get older, they can really help invest in some of those routines that work for them. So predictability is important, but also individual differences.
I think that the individual differences is so important. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that we make as parents is that we try to make everything a one size fits all. Right. Like this is, and I'm infamous for saying this at our house. I say, this is the way the Dangs do things. And it's not, and we are not a monolith, although I try to act like we are most of the time. And it's very important to sort of let them understand. Like Dr. Carla said something really interesting when she said that she is the one child that sets the alarm for cuddles.
Yeah.
I have two cuddlers in my house. One wants to sleep and cuddle. So she's like, why don't you just get in bed with me? We'll just do this for 15 minutes.
Yes.
And then I have one that's just like, she just needs a good hug. And then she's ready to up and, you know, she's mm-hmm. like, she hugs you, she tells you she loves you, and then she's ready to go. She doesn't need anything else. Mm-hmm. But that other kid's like, she's just looking for excuses. And half the time we're thinking, is this affection or is this you trying to sleep some more? She's like, she'll be like, oh, why don't you scratch my back? Why don't you hug me again? Why don't you get under the covers with me? I'm like, no, you have to get out of bed. But that's just how she does. That's sort of her right. way of doing things.
Right.
And the more we roll with it, when you roll with her, she's much more, you know, easy to deal with in the morning yeah. than when you go against that and it's right. like, and you feel the wrath.
Right, right.
Now,
I think that's absolutely true. And I think that going with it really helps that relationship, that responsive parenting yeah. we were talking about earlier. And then you build on what they love, what works for you as a parent and child dyad, or, you know, if you have more kids in there. And then you can also encourage when that doesn't happen. Wow, you are really independent today. You got up and figured it out on your own, you know, however that works. So you can really use that. You almost bank on that positive time together to get through the other time.
Now, Dr. Gretchen, you brought up something when we talked a little bit earlier to introduce the topic that I thought was really important in this. In that you as the parent yeah. have to have your sort of routine sort of in place too. You said for you that it was you have to shower before the kids are up.
Yeah.
In my world, I actually need to do something that's completely not related to the act of sort of being the responsible person. I actually get up a half hour early and read a book.
Oh yeah.
For a half hour mm-hmm. before the first sort of kid and parent and, you know, husband alarms go
yes.
off.
Mm-hmm.
I just sit there and I read the book and I, you know, kind of relax my brain and then just, you know, then I don't feel like groggy and messy getting out of
right.
bed. Like I'm clear once
right.
I get up and so can you talk a little bit about why it's important for sort of parents to sort of practice what they preach in terms of morning routine?
You bet. I mean, because we're a system, right? And so any one part of the system is going to impact the other part of a system. There's just no way around it. So the way that I show up as a parent is going to impact my kids, period. Like it can't not mm-hmm. impact it. And so I have to make sure that as the parent, I am showing up the way I need to show up so that I am giving my kids what they need from me. And I think it is what they need from me when it comes to the routines and kind of getting through their day, getting their day off to a good start, getting their night off to a good, you know, wrapping up nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just have to be aware of that. We have to kind of ask ourselves, I think when I was talking about troubleshooting with sleep, you know, what's getting in the way? I think it's not just what's getting in the way for your child, but also what's getting in the way for you. Like what is coming up for you when your child is having a hard time getting to bed for whatever reason, getting to bed, falling asleep, staying asleep? You know, what is it you're bringing? What are your worries? What are your thoughts? What are your beliefs? You know, what are your core beliefs about what the child, quote unquote, should be doing versus what they're actually doing? It's really, I think it can do a lot for you as a parent if you take that time to step back and really reflect on the dynamics. What you're bringing to the table is impacting your child and vice versa, because your child is no doubt pushing buttons within you to stir up those emotions. It goes back and forth. It's bidirectional, that relationship.
Absolutely. Dr. Carla, can we talk a little bit about breakfast? Because I think we hear this, we say this thing over and over about how it's the most important meal of the day. But I think we really underestimate how important it is in a morning routine.
I think that's really true. You know, kids vary with how they think about breakfast and want breakfast, just like we as adults do. So what I like to help families do and what I do with my own kids is to talk with kids ahead of time about planning for breakfast. So are you a kid that doesn't want to have a whole choice, that you want it prepped and ready, right? Then what you do is you figure out, you buy what you need at the grocery store and you have it all ready in the morning so that you independently can go put that waffle in the toaster, or you independently can pour your cereal and milk. And that way you are doing what you need to get yourself ready for the day. I think if we as parents are the only ones in control of that as kids get older, then it seems more like we're forcing them to do something, right? And that sets you up for what might go wrong in terms of having a crabby morning, not having enough time. Always having the kids ready to eat breakfast. So when they're young, you're doing it for them. But as they get older, I think the more that they can participate in that, the better that they can judge how that makes them feel to have a healthy breakfast.
Yeah, and I would piggyback onto that, just to say, you know, to have that conversation include, you know, what is your body actually needing in terms of the energy that breakfast provides you? Like, what does the body need? And I think, you know, protein, what I really learned in working with kids and seeing my own kids, that they do so much better when their breakfast includes protein, mm-hmm, because it mm-hmm. sticks with them longer. And that's, you know, the brain needs, can use protein and metabolize it. And so when they're off to school, it can help sustain them until either snack or lunchtime. And, you know, what also can happen is that some kids wake up and they don't have very much of an appetite in the morning. And so then breakfast is really challenging from that point of view, because they're not hungry, and it's really hard to eat when you're not hungry. So then it's also kind of thinking about, you know, what are some things that you don't have to eat very much of, but they are substantial enough that it's going to get you through. And then is there a way that you can bring snacks along so that as your morning goes on, you can get a little bit more energy and nutrition that you may be needing to get you through until lunchtime?
Well, I love that you said that about protein. I tend to, in our world, we piggyback two sort of specific practices. One, I'm the queen of the car snacks. There's always something in my car that sits in the glove box that can be consumed quickly that's mm-hmm. good for them. But I also had to really let go of my definition of breakfast. Mm-hmm. And as a parent, I think that's really hard, because you think a traditional breakfast is whatever you grew up eating.
Mm-hmm.
So you automatically think, if it doesn't involve eggs, if it doesn't involve this, it's not breakfast. So when your kid comes and tells you they want to make like a bologna sandwich for breakfast mm-hmm. or a ham and cheese or they want like hummus and carrots. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's not breakfast. I had to really learn how to let go of that and go, you know what? Is it good for you? Will it help you? Are you willing to eat it? Okay. I mean, you didn't ask me to eat gummy bears for breakfast,
right.
So we're cool.
Right.
You know, and that's letting go of some of that, you know, sort of the preconceived notion
right.
helps out a lot, because it kind of opens up sort of the floodgates. Your kid might not want like to sit down and eat scrambled eggs for breakfast.
Right.
But they, you know, but if carrots and peanut butter are their favorite thing and they'll eat that, let them have it. You know,
for
it's
sure.
like then they'll get it. And then you've won another little, you know, battle on your way out the door. Set your day up right. So at least you hope.
Right.
Okay. Now we have to take one more break. When we come back, we're going to talk about homework. Yes, I know. Trust me, they're here to help. And we'd also will happily take your call. 651-641-1071. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Mom Show on My Talk 107.1.
It's all over the internets. Pop culture is a thing. And it's our thing. My Talk 107.1. Everything entertainment.
No, you're not alone. I'm only one.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Mom Show here on My Talk 107.1. I'm Twyla Dang, and today I've been joined in the studio by Dr. Gretchen from Blossom Whole Family Therapy and Child Psychology Center, and Dr. Carla as well. Thank you both for coming in today. This has been a really fun and informative discussion. I know we got a quick call off air, so I'll answer it really quickly, because I get myself into these things when I volunteer up what I do with my family. Someone called and asked what kind of snacks I keep in the car. I was in the beginning terrible about like things like fruit snacks, all the bad stuff. But as I sort of read about and learned about nutrition, I started being smart enough to keep things in the car that kind of could keep for a while. So your best bet are like nuts, dried fruits, if your kids don't have allergies to those kind of things. Simple things that give them a little bit of like salt and fat, like your plantain chips. Do the occasional like beef jerky stick mm-hmm. type things if we need some quick proteins mm-hmm. As well. Those are sort of the go-tos, because they can keep all winter and they don't sort of freeze and melt like other things do. I stay away from boxed granola bars and all that good stuff. It's not that they're bad. It's just they're more like candy and they're more like a treat. If you really look at the sugar and the mm-hmm. content on those, it's pretty high. So I'm not nearly as Martha Stewart to make those things myself. So your best bet is like small things. You can keep it small increments. Places like Trader Joe's have great options for things like that. And, you know, places like Aldi have really great options of single serve, things like that, that you can just throw in the car and not think about. So hopefully that helps. And now we're going to transition into the thing that I need to take the most notes for. Homework routines.
Homework
routines. Heavens to Betsy. Yes. Dr. Carla, I know you're going to need to help me because homework is the bane of my existence.
Isn't that true? Don't we all need those stress-free after-school routines?
Yes, absolutely.
Just substitute after-work routines, right?
Absolutely. And drinking is not involved, so we need other, we need actual helpful things.
We need something else for kids. Okay, so let's think about this. I have a little framework that might help us think about it. The first thing is really to have a positive greeting when you come home, right? I mean, we talked earlier about individual kid differences. Some kids want that hug right when they come in. Some kids want alone time, right? We all understand this as adults. We have different ways to come in and transition from one activity to the next. So greeting your kids in a positive way and allowing them a little time to figure out what works for them. And then, you know, coming in and having that consistency and routine and predictability, that these things are so important after school as well as they are for bedtime and morning. So having a school, some kind of school station, right? A hook that you hang your backpack on, something that you can clean out those dirty shoes right away and put there so that they're prepped for the next morning. Giving papers and sharing that with your parents so you can talk about it. That's a wonderful thing to do right away if your child can tolerate it. That's usually much more successful for the little ones and school-age kids than it is for tweens and teens who can do some of that more independently later after they have some downtime. Give them food. That is an important routine. We talked a little bit about snacks. I loved your snacks that you shared. I think those nuts, protein-based, it's always a great thing. Give them some things to, because they're hungry right when they come in. That also helps with them being able to share their day with you, for you to start getting out that homework right away so it's there. It's not just a, hey, you need to do this before you go anywhere else, but that it's prepped with food and comfort and talk. That's a wonderful thing. I usually recommend homework right away after that snack because I think if you get it done without disappearing to your room and never seeing them again or letting them sit in front of a TV really helps them kind of transition from their day and share what they're working on. For some kids, it might be different. Maybe they need some downtime right away. So whatever's working for your child and your family. And then playtime. Free play, what, such an important thing for our kids to have after school. So that can be for some kids right away when they get off the bus. A beautiful fall day, you want them to run around outside, and that's okay. But getting those other consistent parts of your routine is wonderful. We can talk more about the benefits of free time. And then really making sure that you're figuring out what the school is communicating to you about, how you can ask the child about their day in a way that doesn't trigger them to say, I don't want to talk about it. But that gives them a chance to really show you through their emptying their backpack and putting those that homework stuff out on the table.
Now, I'm can you talk, Dr. Carl, a little bit about the transition for homework, especially after school, is a lot, to me, feels a lot easier when it's younger children. We're now running into this sort of new wave of how things are done, like in the middle schools and the high schools. Almost all these kids are now being issued things like Chromebooks where where everything is sort of self-contained and you don't actually have access to it. How do you manage an after-school routine when you're really virtually clueless as to what's going on with your kids' information?
Isn't that true? We are all learning new systems, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually a great point to be able to think to yourself how much the kids are taking in that's new. And that's sometimes why it's so hard for them to come home. They dump it on us, don't they? But that's part of what the responsive parenting is knowing when to give them space and when to help them through some of these new expectations. So one of the things I would say is the communication with the school is important. Most schools have sent out a way for parents to stay connected and to monitor. In our district, it's called Schoology. It might be a parent portal, whatever that is electronically. And for a lot of parents, that means they prep themselves during the day, during their school, and just kind of looking, what is my child needing to do for tomorrow? Do they have tests coming up? Do they have any missing assignments? So that's one of the ways that you can stay involved as your kid gets, as your child gets more older in terms of tweens and teens. I like to give parent, kids independence on that, meaning we have a time each evening, or I recommend this for parents, each evening to kind of check in about that. show me. Maybe you pull up Schoology together for the kid that struggles with some of those organizational skills. Maybe they just tell you, they check it off. Yeah, I have everything in for tomorrow. And then you can check that later after they go to bed, right? So there's lots of ways to be able to really stay on top of monitoring, which is really the key word.
Monitoring, yeah. And I think always, this is where parenting is an art as much as it is a science, right?
Indeed.
Because I think, again, there is this very delicate balance between monitoring and kind of knowing what's going on and being too involved and being too directive, especially as your kids are getting into junior high and high school, when you kind of need to be, stepping back enough to give them the space and sometimes to actually experience failure and not be successful, because that isn't a bad thing. I think we think it is, but it's really not. What we as parents, part of our job is to teach kids how to respond when we don't do as well as we might want to do or would like to have done. And being able to not view that as such a negative thing, but rather as an opportunity to learn, as an opportunity to grow. I work with a lot of kids who can be a little more on the perfectionistic side and are very bothered by, you know, anything that's not an A. And, in their mind, they might as well be failing, and it's like a B+. Mm-hmm, it's like, mm-hmm. Okay. But it's like some of the best things in life have come from failures, have come from people that have made mistakes. You know, we wouldn't have chocolate chip cookies if it weren't for a mistake. We wouldn't have post-it notes if it weren't for, there's all these great things. And so, I think as parents, we have to get out of the mindset that we can't allow. It's okay that our kids fail. It's okay that they come home with a bad grade. It's okay that they're missing some work. All that means is that they're figuring it out and there's some problem. You know, we have to do some troubleshooting maybe with them, but that doesn't have to be, like this huge problem.
Well, in the final minute, can we just sort of briefly, Dr. Gretchen, touch on sort of thinking about routines from the perspective, if you have a child that has maybe a social emotional issues going on or some sort of developmental issues going on, and sort of how you have to, maybe take an extra step of care with that.
Well, I think it's been a theme kind of throughout our talk, right? When Dr. Carla talks about responsive parenting, it's understanding what it is that your child is needing and looking at your child as an individual and understanding if you have a child who is more anxious and has a lot more questions that they're asking, then you're just going to have to know that you're going to probably need a little more time. You're going to have to just go into it with that kind of a mindset. If you have a child that's more distractible, you have to just accept that that's part of who your child is. And then you have to think about how are you going to create an environment where they can still be successful and troubleshoot some of those things.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Carla and Dr. Gretchen, thank you so much for participating in the show today. I feel like we learned a lot. And if you want to hear this on-demand podcast or you want to share it with others, you can get it within 24 hours. Go to mytalk1071.com, put in keyword mom. And we'll also have links up on the website if you would like to get in touch with Dr. Gretchen or Dr. Carla. And thank you. Thanks again for listening, you guys. We love doing this show. So thanks so much. This is The Mom Show on My Talk 1071.